I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello, happy Monday. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And This week is Mental Health Week, and so I decided to have, we kind of always talk a little bit about mental health on this show, but I wanted to focus on it more specifically. And so today we're going to be speaking with Kara Melendi, and she is a registered professional counselor and also a coach, and you can find her at Coaching with Kara with a K, coachingwithkara.com. And today we're going to be speaking about the five steps of balanced living. Welcome to the show, Kara.
Thank you, Marie. I'm happy to be here and looking forward to our discussion.
Yay. Okay, so tell us, what got you interested in becoming a counselor?
Yeah, well, I've always felt this strong passion to connect with other people, you know, to kind of help them on their journey and to tap into what's, you know, important to them, to help people feel empowered and kind of find their passion in life. So from an early age, I've always really felt drawn to this profession.
Awesome. And you're Canadian, you're in New Brunswick.
I am in St. John, New Brunswick. Yeah.
Yay. So do people, if they want to meet with you, do they have to see you in person or do you do phone sessions too?
No, I primarily do phone and Skype. So I have a global clientele that I connect with and I have a local practice as well.
And now what's the difference between, I guess in every province it's a little bit different because you are a registered professional counselor, but you have a master's degree. So
yes.
Here in BC, you can call yourself, I think, a therapist.
Mm.
How is it different there?
My background, I mean, I have an undergraduate in psychology and then a master's in counseling and psych. So it's kind of different terms you can use. Like I'm registered as a counselor, but I sometimes refer to myself as a therapist or a psychotherapist as well. So it's kind of just a play on names, I guess, or labels. But yeah, but that would be my background is in psychology.
Awesome. Thank you. And so can you give us a definition of what balance means to you and why we need to be balanced?
Yeah, absolutely. It is kind of one of those abstract terms that we put out there, but it's hard to wrap our mind around what it means and what it looks like for us. And I've noticed through my work without clients, I mean, it's rare that someone will come for counseling or coaching and kind of say, I need more balance in my life or time management. But you do get people coming with anxiety or depression or addictions, all of which are a sign of imbalance. And even, you know, illness in the body is a physical imbalance. So I believe, you know, well-being is really related to finding this balance in our life. So I find, you know, it's really crucial and important, and that's what led me to kind of focus on, you know, balanced living and what that looks like.
Great. Sorry, I've got a cold, so have to bear with me. I'm keeping the mic down as I'm coughing. So you actually teach this five steps of balanced living. In workshops?
Yes, I've been doing presentations in this area on the five different steps, which are really just five different areas in your life that you can look at or kind of focus in on that help you attain this feeling of balance.
Awesome. Okay, so what is step one?
All right. Well, step one is clarifying your values. So values are things that are really important to you, the things that matter the most. So I find, you know, it really provides this nice foundation to work from. You know, so many people go through life without really being clear on what matters most, and that leads to just feeling overwhelmed or this sense of time urgency, or even if you are moving ahead and making progress in your life, meeting your goals, if it's not based on the things you care about the most, you kind of feel this emptiness. kind of this feeling of depression or being overwhelmed and even confused as to why. So really getting clear about what matters, I think, is so important to provide that foundation to build from.
And Kara, so how would we get clear on those values? Because there's so many values that are instilled upon us by our parents or society or teachers, anyone like that. And then there's the getting, you know, needing to make enough money. So how do you figure out what your values are?
Yeah, well, I think that's such a good point, Marie. I feel like we're often so influenced, like you said, by our teachers, by these external things. And it's hard for us to really tap into our value system, what we care about the most. So there's, you know, a number of activities I do with clients in helping them tap into those values. But even just asking yourself some questions, certain questions can be really helpful just to kind of generate some ideas. So one question to ask yourself is, who are your role models? So who are people you really look up to or admire, and why? You know, what are they doing? What is it about them that really inspires you and gets your attention? And also, is there kind of a link between the people that you admire? I mean, what are they doing that's in common? Or what kind of traits do they possess that really gets your attention? And secondly, a really good one, I find this one really puts things into perspective, is imagining, you know, you're 100 years old, looking over your life, what would you regret having not done? What would you say, I really wish I made time to achieve this? Or you're talking to your great-grandchildren, you know, what stories would you want to tell them? How would you want to be remembered? So that one really helps put things in perspective.
That's a really good question.
And to really reflect on these questions as well, you know, not just kind of think of them and write, you know, a couple sentences in response, but really journal on them and take the time to tap in and, you know, tune into what that means to you.
And so can we talk more about what values mean?
Yeah, well, and I mean, values, I find, and especially these, you know, core values are really important, right? It's like once you kind of get reflecting on, you know, what values are, you can really say, okay, maybe I value freedom, or I value, you know, security or happiness or health and or adventure or fun. And you can really get going and name a lot of things. And then the trick is kind of breaking it down to those core values. So the things you really care about the most. And I find, you know, when that happens, there tends to be an overlap for a lot of people. Like when we get down to those main core values, like happiness and health are something that's so important to many people. And things like security and freedom tend to come up a lot as well.
So what happens if someone has conflicting values? Like I would think that security and freedom may not necessarily, I mean, I guess it depends on how you define those things as well. They might not be that compatible.
Yes, and it causes a sense of dissonance or uneasiness within us when that happens, for sure. No, that's a really good point. And often, I mean, we can value security and freedom at the same time. And I think what's so important is to ask ourselves what each thing represents for us. I mean, money is another one that a lot of people write down, but it represents very different things. So, you know, asking yourself, what does money look like for me? You know, is that security? Is it freedom? You know, what kind of form does that take? Why is it important? Can really help us, you know, get down again to those core values. And you know, like you said, sometimes there may be a conflict in those core values, but asking ourselves how they're expressed, what it looks like in our life can kind of break through that uneasiness. Does that make sense?
Or? It does. I'm just curious if you work with people who have conflicting values, and then do they have to give up a value?
Yeah. Well, I think it can be prioritizing them as well. Like often, you know, we may have, like you say, value security as well as freedom, but one may take precedence over another. And, you know, you would commonly see that. And, you know, that's important to kind of prioritize what would come first in my life.
Great. Well, that moves us into the second step.
Yes, which is setting priorities based on what you value the most. So once you have this list of these core values and things you really care about, the trick is kind of structuring a life, setting up a life that supports these values, making them a priority. And, the best way to kind of figure out what you've deemed a priority in your life is asking yourself how you spend your time. So looking over the last couple of weeks, what have you been doing with your time? And that will let you know what you've deemed to be a priority in your life. And that, may or may not reflect your value system. And often I find, when working with clients, unless they've taken the time to really tap into what they care about, there is an incongruence there. They're often spending energy and time on things that are more urgent rather than really important to them.
Okay, and so this is, I learned this in coaching school as well, is to look at how people are spending their time. And there's the difference between urgent and important and things that could be delegated to someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And so often, we get into the mindset of just doing things that are urgent, right, that come on our to-do list. And we don't, make the time for, family or friends or doing what we enjoy. It keeps getting pushed aside.
And so one of the ways that I don't have to always deal with the most urgent things is I've actually turned off the sound when I get a text on my phone, because I find that there's an urgency and it pulls me away. Even if I don't go and look right away, just hearing the ding on my phone pulls my attention away and I can't focus on what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, and that's a great example, especially in today's world, right? We always have our cell phones on, and, we're connected to Facebook on there, Twitter, and, we're devoting a whole lot of time to social media or communicating through people, over text, and, that becomes a priority instead of spending our time doing things we really care about. So like you say, those little tricks can be helpful, turning, that ringer off so you don't hear it right away.
And how...
Go ahead. But even, just making sure you have that foundation of what you care about, I think is so important before you move into that step of setting priorities. Otherwise, you will get in that trap of just doing things that are urgent, coming home and doing the laundry, doing the dishes, instead of spending that quality time with family, because you feel, those are the things that need to be done. They get your attention right away.
So what does it look like when you help someone set their priorities? Do they have it written down? Is there a chart? How does that look?
Well, I think having a visual representation can be very powerful, because often we'll try to work with things just in our mind, wrap our mind around what we're doing. But until we have it on paper, we don't really clearly see how we're spending our time. So, writing it out, often I'll get people to reflect on that question. How have you been spending your time in these past 2 weeks? So they're able to actually write things out and look over it. Okay, this is what I've been devoting my time to. And then, getting their list of values out and comparing it to that. Are any of these things based on my value system, on those guiding principles? Or is it more urgent? So, I think definitely having that visual representation is so important.
Awesome. I feel like this is a tough one for a lot of people, because there's so many things, like you said, with the urgency, and there's so many things that are always calling out to us and always needing attention. And, like you mentioned, the laundry and things like that. And those aren't things that you can just ignore. So I feel like a lot of people struggle with this.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I mean, each of these steps, I feel it's a process, and that's so important to remember. It's, something we have to remind ourselves to do every day. And I think just to really see the importance of coming from a place, of our values and things we want to do, and not, make excuses as to why, we can't spend that extra time with the children, or say we love to paint, why we can't, sit down and create that painting. Often, we'll come up with a list of excuses instead of just restructuring our time to make sure we fit it into our life.
And so what do you do? I think a lot of people feel like they don't have any time, but they might be watching 3 hours of TV every night. And do you, I'm trying to formulate my question. I've got the foggy cold head,
but the cold brain.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, like, and sometimes you need that. Like this weekend I've been sort of nursing this cold. And so normally I don't watch much television, but this weekend I watched, you know, 6 or 7 episodes of a show on Netflix because I was sick. So when do you give yourself permission to do things like that if it's not part of your prioritizing?
For sure, yeah, and that's such a good point. And I mean, our priorities change throughout our life as well. And, you know, when I was giving this presentation to a group of college students last week, you know, many had brought up that right now their school, you know, is taking up most of their time, even though they may value friends and family more. So, you know, what I say in response to that is, you know, make sure that what you're studying is something you really care about, is something you're passionate about. Otherwise, you really are going to kind of burn yourself out in the process because it's very time consuming. So if what you're studying, you know, what you're doing is based on those long-term goals and connected to your values, it's going to give you that motivation you need to keep going. Otherwise, you end up dropping out or because of external pressures, you know, staying in school and then becoming depressed or confused and overwhelmed. So, you know, our priorities, you know, they do change time to time, and we just have to make sure they're connected back to those larger values. So, you know, with you being sick this week, you know, it's your health is probably something that's very important to you. So taking that extra time, you know, to nourish yourself, to relax and to slow down is really probably connected to those core values of, you know, taking me time, taking time to recover.
And actually, I was thinking, why am I sick again? Because I was just sick a couple months ago. I normally don't have health problems very often. But I think because I maybe wasn't having a balanced life the week before, like I was running on very little sleep and I was really busy. And so almost your body sometimes forces you to take a break.
Mm. Yeah, and I agree 100%. I think our body is sending us a message, and any time we're sick, it's saying slow down, you need to take this break, you need to relax, for sure. Yeah.
And Kara, it sounds like you're saying when you focus on your values and your passions, you know, as an example with students, I mean, they do have to make the schooling a priority. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, their grades suffer. But it almost sounds like if you're really focused on what your values are, that's energizing to you rather than draining.
Absolutely, and it should be. And I can relate to being, you know, a student for many years, being in school and sometimes being at that place of being overwhelmed and saying, what am I doing? I'm feeling exhausted, but I was able to bring it back to, you know, I'm studying what I love. I'm going to be able to use this information to help other people, to inspire other people. This is connected to my goal. And, you know, I never second-guessed all the time that I, you know, would be in school, the years it takes to be a therapist, because I knew so strongly it was something I wanted to do. So, yeah, I mean, you need that to fall back on. Otherwise, you know, you do get drained, you do get exhausted, and you do question why, what am I doing here?
All right, well, that brings me to another question. It's almost time for a break, but when you say you knew so strongly what you wanted to do, one of the problems I have in the Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENFP. And so I'm one of those people who has a lot of talents and a lot of interests, and I could really be successful at whatever I focus on. But another trait that ENFPs have is they don't always follow through. They like to jump from project to project. So how did you really get clear on knowing that this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, that's interesting. I hear that from people a lot, right, that diverse interest. I see with personality tests, or I'm also into astrology, and I always say, you know, with Geminis, you see that diverse interest as well. And it was, for me, just such a strong knowing from an early age, really pulled in that direction. And, you know, I think for some people, you know, maybe, you know, their job is to share their talents in a range of different areas and with different people. And that can be okay, too. You know, we don't want to label it as being right or wrong. I mean, that can be a beautiful gift to have talents that can be expressed in so many different areas and can help people, you know, in doing that and giving your attention to whatever you determine to be important at that time in your life. So I don't think there's, you know, any right or wrong way. It's just different for different people.
Awesome. Thank you. And I feel like for me, I have, there's always been sort of a common, a general theme. It might have been different areas, but I've always sort of been in the helping, teaching type of, I've been more drawn to that. So I think if you have lots of interest, you can, like, looking at your role models and what are the common links, sort of the same thing as with your interests, right?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And often they're related in ways we don't always see, right? Like you said, that, you know, that desire to help other people, to inspire other people, or, you know, some people are very hands-on, right? They want, you know, the action to really experience things. So usually there is a link if we step back and, you know, really look at it. That's absolutely true.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, it's time for a break. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Tara Melendi right now. She is a registered professional counselor, and we are speaking about the 5 steps of balanced living. And if you're interested in finding out more about Kara, you can find her at coachingwithkara.com, coaching with a K, and Kara with a K, coachingwithkara.com. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
Doxa Documentary Film Festival discovers new forms of nonfiction film, everything from mountain gorillas to cartoon ponies and the men who love them. With a special spotlight program, Secrets and Lies, that examines the art of deception. The festival is happening May 2nd to 11th. For more information, go to www.doxafestival.ca.
There are a lot of things you're not allowed to grow in your basement in Vancouver. Vegetables are not one of those things.
SPEC and the YWCA are excited to introduce the Urban Farmer Field School. The UFFS provides hands-on training in sustainable agriculture, small farm business planning, and community food action.
Class instructors are experts in urban agriculture, food systems, and plant mind control. The integrated curriculum is divided between classroom theory and practical learning.
For more information, please visit the interweb and search for Farmer Field School at spec.bc.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are joined today by registered professional counselor Kara Melendi. Welcome back to the show, Kara.
Thank you.
So let's. So the first 2 steps of balanced living, one was clarifying values. And the other was setting priorities based on those values.
Yes.
And now what's the third step?
The third step is becoming clear about what you can and cannot control. And this one is so crucial. I always say, you know, nothing will throw you out of balance faster than giving energy, attention, and time to things beyond your control. And this one really plays out in relationships as well. So I say there's so many things within our realm of control. We can control our attitude, our outlook on life, how we communicate with other people, you know, our values, our morals, and most importantly, how we respond to other people and how we respond to our experiences. And that's really where our power lies, is focusing our attention on those things that we can control and not giving attention to the things beyond our control, like other people's beliefs, other people's judgments and opinions. Sometimes the circumstances we find ourselves in. So really just paying attention to where we're giving our attention and focus to.
Now, I imagine, Kara, I don't know about with coaching. I know with coaching, it's very solution focused and people are quite motivated to create change. But with counseling, a lot of times people are quite stuck. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that this is a big one for people that they get stuck on, because there's so many things that even our attitude, sometimes it feels like we can't control that if we're really easily influenced by outside sources.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. This is a very big one, and that's why I always like to start out with just making people aware of the things that are within their realm of control. Because like you said, so often, you know, we don't even realize the power that we have, or we can fall into this victim mentality, which, you know, I do see quite a bit with the clients that I counsel, where, you know, we feel like we're a victim to our circumstances and our situation, and we forget that we're in control of how we respond. You know, we can't always control what happens to us, but we can control our actions in response to it, and that's where our power lies. So even just educating people on the victim mentality, what that looks like, and how you can, you know, take steps to get out of that by focusing on the things you are responsible for, the things that you can control.
Now, I imagine, Kara, that this is can be a pretty long road for people, because we talk about free will, we talk about choice and the things that we have control over, but then we also talk on this show a lot about our neural pathways. And if someone has been taught from a very young age that they are a victim, or that, you know, the way other people treat them is how they're going to react to the world, breaking that habit and creating new ones is, I mean, there is, on one level, there's free will, but if you're actually stuck in that habit, how much free will really is there?
And that's so true. And I know, you know, I'll work with clients and they'll say, you know, I'm trying to change the way I think about this and see this, but it's really hard. And you're right, you know, our brains are programmed in a way where we tend to, you know, think the same thoughts today as we did yesterday. And we get stuck in this patterned way of thinking. So, you know, the whole idea of neuroplasticity is that we can change that programming. We can change that patterning. We just have to be persistent, right? And the first step is being aware of what we're doing. And then the second step is really understanding that, you know, we can train our brain to function differently, you know, in a more positive way that can support us and be helpful if we take the time to reprogram it. So, you know, we have this healthy programming as the new default. But it does take time, and it is a process. But it's possible.
Awesome. Well, Kara, I'm just wondering if you have one or two. I know every counselor and therapist, they use many different techniques. What are some of the techniques you use to help clients rewire their brains and create healthier patterns of behavior?
Yeah, well, I work a lot with cognitive behavioral therapy, also known as CBT, which is really trying to get this connection between what you're thinking and how you're behaving. So the link between your thoughts, your behavior, and also your emotions. So really understanding that connection, and then understanding that if you change those thinking patterns, you know, in response, you're going to change your emotional reactions, and then your behavior is going to be different. So CBT is one I really focus on because I find it very empowering and so important. You know, it always comes back to our thoughts, the way we see the world, our belief system. So developing those healthy patterns. And it's also empowering for people to realize that I have more control than I think. You know, if I change my thoughts, I'm going to change my reality. I'm going to change the world. So my world. So it's, you know, I love using these techniques that are very empowering. And I also am very into energy psychology, so I'll often use the emotional freedom technique, or EFT, more commonly known as tapping. And that's a really great one for changing our emotional connections to different events and situations. So it works really well along with CBT because it changes kind of our physiology. So it works where the CBT is more focused on the mind, EFT is more focused on our body, the chemistry behind it. So they work really well together.
Thanks, Kara. I'm curious, with cognitive behavioral therapy, we talk a lot about our thoughts, especially with the law of attraction and spirituality and all of that. But sometimes, I mean, there's in cognitive behavioral therapy, there's something called opposite action. So you might be having these thoughts, I hate myself, I feel terrible, blah, blah, blah. But you actually do an action, a physical behavior that's different and opposite of how you're feeling. And then that eventually changes your thoughts.
Yeah, you're right. Well, and that's what's great with CBT is you can come at it from any of those angles. You know, you can change your behavior, and in turn, that's going to change your thoughts and your emotions. Or you can work on the emotional level with something like EFT or different relaxation techniques. And as you change your emotions, you're going to change your thoughts as well. So it's very cyclical, and you can kind of intervene at any one of those areas to produce, you know, a changed response or the desired response.
Awesome. Well, are we ready to move on to step 4?
Sure, and I think we had probably kind of touched on it, because step four is developing healthy thinking patterns. So this really comes into play with, focusing on what you can and cannot control. And like you had pointed out, you know, at times it feels like we can't control our thoughts. And I agree that we can't always control what pops into our head, but we can control whether or not we dwell on it. You know, if it's an unhelpful thought, we can say, you know, I'm going to choose to let this go and not focus on it. It's not helping me. So I think there's a responsibility there as well to become aware of our thought patterns, our belief systems, and to let go of the ones that aren't serving us, aren't helping us, and start to develop these healthier patterns that, you know, support our success. And with neuroplasticity, you know, that is very possible if we have that commitment and the desire to do those, make those changes.
Now, Kara, how, I imagine as a registered professional counselor, you work with a variety of different people. And how is it different for someone who, say, has a chemical imbalance like clinical depression versus someone who is maybe has a more average brain chemistry and they're trying to just be healthier in their thinking? What's the difference between those two?
Yeah, and, you know, I will see that quite a bit. You know, there's many patients that come in that are diagnosed with depression, and, you know, they may be taking medication and treatment for it. And I find, you know, a lot of times now people are wanting to get away from the medication and try these other things. And I always say, you know, I'm not a doctor, and all these techniques you can use alongside, you know, taking the medication. So, you know, there may be a difference there. There is a difference in the chemistry. And, you know, again, if they are on medication, especially a medication that they find is working for them and helping them, it can, you know, regulate those chemicals in the brain. So they're more able to, you know, do these processes like CBT or do the relaxation techniques. So sometimes, you know, it is necessary. But I also think as well, you know, doing stuff like cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're really becoming aware of your thoughts, your belief systems, and, you know, beginning to challenge them instead of just going on autopilot and accepting them as truths, you're able to step back and challenge them. That can actually change the chemistry of your brain as well. So, you know, it may be a difference starting out, but I really, you know, like to feel like these things, these techniques are possible for people regardless, you know, of a diagnosis of depression or not.
Awesome. Well, is there anything you want to add before we move on to step five?
Well, with developing healthy thinking patterns, this is something I focus so much attention on. So I feel, you know, there's so much to do with all, you know, with all of these things. There's so much work that can be done or said about them. And I find, you know, with our belief systems, they're often formed, you know, in psychology, we say by the age of 7, our belief systems are in place. So that's pretty young. And, you know, we see our beliefs as being true. So we kind of go through our daily life and look for situations and examples to support our beliefs. So if we believe the world is, you know, a scary, mean place, we're going to look and see examples that support that. But if we see the world, you know, as a caring, loving place, we'll see examples that support that belief. So it's so crucial that, you know, we take that time to step back and say, you know, what are my beliefs? What are they based on? And are they true? Or is it just something I've accepted as being true and kind of carried with me all these years?
Well, that's a good point, Kara. And I'm curious, because no matter what your belief is about the world, that it's a loving place or that it's a scary place, bad stuff happens to everybody.
Mm.
Hard things, illnesses, getting screwed over, whatever, you know, things, negative things happen to everyone. So what's the difference between someone who has this negative view of the world and has a negative experience versus someone who has a positive view of the world and then they're faced with a major challenge?
Yeah. Well, and I think it makes, you know, a world of difference, because it goes back to whether we're focusing on what's in our realm of control and what isn't. And, you know, sometimes the things that happen to us are outside of our control. So if we just react as a victim to that, you know, thinking, poor me, what am I going to do? We're going to stay very stuck. We're not going to make any progress and move forward. But if we have the belief that, you know, I'm able to get over this, I'll draw on my supports, I'll make changes in my life, you know, that's very empowering. So really, you know, the same experience can affect people in very different ways depending upon their belief system.
And it's interesting, though, because you'll sometimes see even people in the same family will have completely different belief systems.
Absolutely. And again, you know, I think that goes back to our beliefs are, you know, they're formed really at such a young age. So if we haven't taken the time to really examine them, we may be carrying around beliefs, say, at age 35 that we developed when we were 5 years old. So they really don't have a place anymore. But if we don't take the time to step back and examine them, again, we're carrying them around with us and we keep looking for examples to prove that they're true. So going back to what we can and cannot control, you know, I believe we can't go back and change what happened to us at that young age, but it's our responsibility to examine our belief systems today and ask whether they're helping us or hurting us.
Thank you. Well, it's time for a break, Kara, so we will be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment. Right now, we're speaking with Kara Melendi. She is a registered professional counselor. You can find her at coachingwithkara.com, and she spells both coaching and Kara with a K, coachingwithkara.com. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a clothing.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture. And that's been around for centuries.
For a taste of the classics with a twist, join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
When I first got back from a military tour in Afghanistan, any time I heard a siren or even a car alarm, I'd lose it completely. I would turn into a wild man, screaming, waving my arms. People would yell at me, "Shut up, you crazy! Get a job, would ya?" Well, I didn't go out and get a job. I got help instead. Now, I'm in a clean and safe apartment. I have friends and helpers who understand me. I landed a decent job. But I gotta admit, I still don't like car alarms or sirens. I used to think mental illness was a death sentence. I got life instead.
This message was produced by Columbian Center Society and Radio Malaspina in British Columbia.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're speaking with Kara Melendi. She's a registered professional counselor, and she is in St. John's, New Brunswick, which is in Canada. If you're not from Canada, you might not know where that is, but she takes clients from all over the world on the phone and Skype, coachingwithkara.com, and she spells coaching and Kara with a K. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. So is there anything else you want to mention about developing healthy thinking patterns?
Let's see. Well, I guess what I can do quickly is maybe walk everybody through just these three steps I use to kind of help people examine their belief system and replace it with healthy programming. So again, the first goes back to being aware, so getting out of that autopilot mode or otherwise, you know, we're thinking the same thoughts today as we had yesterday. So really being aware, and then that second step is challenging your belief system. So instead of accepting that inner critic, that self-talk as being the truth, to step back and really examine it and question it and say, you know, is it true? Who told me this? Where did I hear this message? What's an example of this not being true? So when we begin to challenge it, we see that, you know, it's just a thought. It doesn't have to have all this, doesn't have to have an effect on us unless we allow it to. And then the last is replacing them with affirmations. And I do a lot of work with affirmations. So they're positive statements we say to ourselves or about the world. And I really love, you know, working with affirmations. I find they have, you know, a huge effect on people when that's paired with challenging your thoughts and becoming aware to actually start putting in that new programming.
So can you give us an example of that, Kara?
Sure. Well, I love to work with Louise Hay affirmations. She's known as the Queen of Affirmations. So I use a lot of hers, but really I'll work with people on developing their own, ones that are going to have meaning to them. So it can be, you know, very, very simple ones like, you know, I believe in myself. There's nothing that I cannot achieve. So, you know, just really statements that support where we want to go. And I do a lot of workshops with teens, and I always make these affirmations a crucial part of it, where they write out these statements and, you know, put them on these little decorative cards, and I'll tell them, you know, post these on your lockers, put them in your pencil case at school, put them on your wall, so you're getting these positive messages every day.
So would they be actually like the, maybe one belief might be, people don't care about me, and then would you base an affirmation on that, like to counter that?
Sure. And, you know, the first step would be just taking that and, you know, being aware of it. People don't care about me. And stepping back, you know, is that even true? Do people not care about me? What's an example of someone showing me that they really do care? And then, you know, maybe replacing it with, you know, there's many people out there who show love to me every day. So really first just taking that belief, becoming aware of it, stepping back and challenging it, looking for examples when, you know, it wasn't true, and then coming up with an affirmation. And the affirmation that's used will really depend on the person, and sometimes going too far in the opposite or positive direction becomes too hard for that person to believe. So it's finding sometimes more of a balanced way of looking at it, something they can believe. So it could be, you know, using that example, there are people out there who have showed that they care for me, who have showed me love.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that, Kara, because I do feel like someone who is living in poverty, they might have an affirmation of I'm a millionaire, and then that doesn't, it's not really believable for them, but they could have an affirmation of I always have enough and I can earn more.
Yes. Absolutely, and that's so important to have one that resonates with you, because I know there, you know, there is a lot of debate out there about affirmations and how effective they are, and it often revolves around the idea that, you know, is saying something that you don't believe in, that you don't feel, you know, is that helping you or is that really hurting you? Is that just reinforcing what you do feel? So it is very important to place it with one, you know, replace an affirmation with something you do believe in that does resonate with you. And, you know, to also pair that with becoming aware and challenging your thoughts. So you're not just trying to put in these new, you know, great messages without stepping back and becoming aware of what you're currently telling yourself and what your inner critic is saying and why.
So it almost sounds like you're talking about evidence-based affirmations, like that this is at least sometimes true.
And because that can be more believable for people, right? And it can really challenge them to examine their belief system and say, okay, let me look for examples of when this was, you know, wasn't true, or when, you know, this positive statement was true. So really just working with shifting your perception as well.
Great. And what about number 5?
Okay, so step 5 is taking time for relaxation. And again, this one is so important, and we've all heard this time and time again, you know, take time to relax. But so often, you know, we fall into that, you know, it might be important, but I have other things that are urgent, and we don't get around to it. But what happens in our society now, where almost all of us are constantly in a state of fight or flight mode, or also called fight, flight, or freeze mode. And when this happens, you know, our heart rate increases, blood pressure increases, there's an increase in the stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline pumping through the body, and, you know, all the blood is going to our heart, which produces that fight response, or our legs, which is that flee response. So it's a very, you know, uncomfortable sensation, and over time it can really break down our immune system, so we find we're getting sick. And it's also responsible, you know, for those symptoms of anxiety and stress that we experience that, you know, affect our memory, that make us feel overwhelmed, the stress pain or feeling of nauseousness.
Thank you. So, Kara, I'm curious now. I noticed that, as an example, I guess I want to talk about what are effective ways to relax, because I hear of people who are so overwhelmed and they have so much going on. They're so stressed out. And yet then every night they watch 4 hours of television when their houses are a disaster. And you know, I mean, just having a house that's a mess can be mentally draining. So how do people prioritize what's a healthy and effective way to relax? How are you going to get the most bang for your buck?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll get so many, you know, clients that'll come in, and, you know, I always really give a lot of attention to relaxation techniques. And, you know, almost everyone is so willing to try these and looking for these different techniques. And I believe I had mentioned EFT or tapping earlier on, and this is a great way to relax as well. You know, many relaxation techniques are aimed at shutting off this fight or flight response in the body. And, you know, there's still a lot of studies and research being done around how EFT works, but one of the mechanisms is it's thought to shut off this response so the body can kind of go back into that natural state of balance. So that's a really big one. And also just working with different deep breathing exercises are really helpful. Because again, when we're, you know, in this mode, not enough blood is getting to the brain, not enough oxygen is getting there. So doing deep breathing makes sure that the blood flow, oxygen is getting back into your brain, and it, you know, kind of calms your body down and allows you to think more clearly again.
Cool. It just brings up another, what I was talking about, sort of avoiding housework and stuff. Can we talk a little bit about the difference between taking specific conscious time for relaxing and procrastinating? Because a lot of people do that.
Yes, for sure. Well, and I'm sure, you know, people have done that. And, you know, I think we always know if we kind of tune in to ourselves, you know, am I doing this, you know, to relax, to really refresh and re-energize myself so I can be more effective and be more productive? Or, you know, am I doing this to avoid things that need to be done? So it really is just tuning in and checking in with yourself and saying, you know, what are my motives? What are my reasoning behind this? And, you know, I'm all about, I don't like to tell people, you know, what they should be doing or, you know, what they ought to do. I feel like they know what's best if they really tune in and listen to that voice. So I think we know ourselves, you know, when it will benefit us to take that time to relax, or when, you know, we do need to take that time to do the dishes and to do the housework. We just, you know, sometimes listening to that voice, that inner voice, is what's tricky. I find it's not so much the knowing, just the listening and following through with it.
Wonderful. Well, we have just a few minutes here on CITR before Chris Horrific is up with Parts Unknown. So, Kara, I'm just wondering, what would you like to focus on for the rest of the show?
Sure. Well, and I think at the beginning, I don't know if I ever actually gave a definition of balanced living, what I mean by balanced. So I can, you know, go over that briefly if you like.
Sure.
Okay. So, and you'll see how that kind of ties in with these 5 points as well. So the first is really this feeling of being in control and empowered in our life. So I feel that when we're balanced, you know, we get up each day, we have this focus, we have this drive, you know, we're living a life that is based on our values, the things that matter most to us. It's kind of the opposite of being overwhelmed and just going through the motions. And, you know, secondly, when we're balanced, we have this feeling of happiness and being at peace. So we're all kind of searching or, you know, wanting happiness in our life, and we go about it in different ways. And, you know, often the decisions we make, we feel will bring us happiness. You know, if I find the perfect partner, if I advance in my career, then I'll be happy. But really, you know, it's that happiness that we're seeking that comes from within. And lastly, I feel like balanced living really incorporates awareness. So being aware of our response to people, of our situation, you know, our response to the environment, and also embracing, you know, the principles of mindfulness, such as compassion, patience, understanding, forgiveness, and directing those toward ourselves.
Beautifully said. Thank you. And Kara, I'm curious, what if someone is listening right now and thinking about wanting to work with you, what would be your ideal client?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love working with people who are really motivated to make these changes in their life because I want to support them and help empower them and, you know, give them some guidance. So someone who is very motivated to say, you know, I'm ready to make these changes in my life. I'm ready to live from a place that's based on my values, what I care about the most, and to really, you know, develop thinking patterns that support this, to develop behaviors that support me in, you know, living my dream and living what I enjoy. So someone who's very motivated and ready to make that change.
And how are your sessions structured? Because I've been to therapists before where I've actually had to tell them, and like I feel like I come in here and I complain for an hour and then I leave. And, you know, even after asking them, like, I need more structure, I need more focus, it just doesn't happen. It just turns into a bitch session every, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that word on the radio, but, you know, like a complaint session for the hour. So how are your sessions structured?
Well, you know, definitely not like that. And that's where I kind of struggle with using, you know, the word therapist as well, because sometimes I find what I'm doing is more in line, you know, with coaching or being a mentor or really an empowerment coach, because I like to focus on more people's strengths, what's going right in their life as opposed to what's going wrong. And, you know, to take, we all have these different concerns or things we want to change. So to acknowledge that and say, okay, what can we do to make these changes in your life now? Let's put something solid in place so you're not just stuck complaining about what you don't like, but you can start to take responsibility for the things within your control and make the changes to create the life you do like and you do want to live.
So what happens if someone comes in and they're like, oh, it's been such a hard week, how do you stop them?
Well, and you know, I'm very sensitive to that and can understand where they'd be coming from, but at the same time, I want to, you know, hopefully help them to see that, you know, venting's one thing, but being stuck in a place where you're, constantly complaining is just going to keep you stuck. It's not going to change anything. And, you know, some people, I guess, aren't always ready to make those changes. You know, they're more comfortable just being stuck complaining. So that's why I say, you know, I love working with people who are at a place in their life where they're motivated and ready to make the changes, to be proactive, to take responsibility. They're done with the complaining and they're ready to focus on what they can change and control.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we close the show?
Well, it's been great being here today. And, you know, my hope is that this information was valuable for people and, you know, that the listeners can take it to the next step and apply it to their life where they can really start to see and experience the changes.
All right. Well, thank you. And the best way for people to get in touch with you?
They can check out my website. Again, it's www.coachingwithkara.com, and coaching spelt with a K, so K-O-A-C-H-I-N-G with Kara, K-A-R-A. And, you know, from that website, there's a place where you can contact me through email or through phone. So either way works.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kara. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, happy to be here. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Again, that was Kara Melendi. She is a registered professional counselor. You can find her at coachingwithkara.com. Coaching and Kara are spelled with a K. And this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for being with me. And I'm going to close the show with a song by local artist Theta Phoenix. This is from her album Legacy. And it's the title track, Legacy, here on CITR.
Songs of freedom, songs of love, songs that inspired us
all to rise up, make the changes in this world, answering the call to protect this beautiful planet and the dignity of all. We regained our liberty as a people, self-governing. We choose to live in harmony, working together, thriving and free. The face of the world has really changed, liberated from fear and shame. We have reclaimed our God-given right to clean water, clean air, food and life. The light shone from the eyes of love. Your voice touches the hearts of all, inspiring the courage, freedom to act, freedom to choose, dream and dance, to do what's right, and take a chance on life. We've returned to growing food by hand, harvest the crops and care for the land, respect the animals and the trees and all our human family. We are connected like the grass's roots, friends with our neighbors, we speak the truth, barter and share locally with currency that's usury free. We cherish the earth, have abolished all toxins, our oceans are clean, and the whales and salmon rocking.
To act, freedom to choose, dream and dare.
Did you know multiple sclerosis is the most common neurological disease affecting young adults in Canada? MS is unpredictable, affecting vision, hearing, memory, balance, and mobility. Join us this year at the MS Walks across the Lower Mainland to help raise vital funds for people living with MS. For more information, please visit mswalks.ca. Let's lace up together to end MS. From June 18th to the 22nd, it's the 8th annual Sled Island Festival, featuring over 250 bands, films, artists, and comedians spread across 30-plus venues concentrated in the downtown core and surrounding areas of Calgary, Alberta. Featuring bands such as St. Vincent, Dan Deacon, Killer Mike, Rennie Wilson, and so much more. Passes are on sale now. For tickets and more information, go to sledisland.com.
CITR is proud to sponsor Seattle's own The Horde and the Harem in a co-headliner with local favorites, the Ruffle Feathers, at the Cobalt on Thursday, May 15. Tickets available at Zulu, Neptune, Highlife, and Red Cat Records, as well as Northern Tickets for $8 plus service charge, $12 at the door. For more band information, visit www.theruffledfeathers.com. Doors at 9. See you there.